Pilate had tried to get Jesus to be let go. Every year they had a Passover pardon. He made the offer. They could choose Barabbas or Jesus. From about 200 AD, they thought Barabbas's name was Jesus Barabbas. Not sure whether that's right or not, but if so, it was, do you want Jesus Barabbas or Jesus Christ? He tried. He did not agree. What evil has he done? In last week's section, Matthew 27. But when he tried to release him, the enemies used what they would call a political action committee. You are no friend of Caesar. And there actually was a group called the Friends of Caesar. Pilate washed his hands. This was a Roman custom. He displayed that he was not personally in favor of this. We looked at the first part of Matthew 27:26 last week because we talked about Barabbas. But we're going to go back to Matthew 27:26 now and talk about the scourging of Jesus, which we didn't do last time. So Matthew 27:26. Then he released Barabbas for them. But after having Jesus scourged, he handed him over to be crucified. The law of Moses limited whippings to 40 stripes. To be careful, they wouldn't hit 40. They had 13 straps. They had 3 straps, and they would only do it 13 times. So 3 straps, 13 times, 39, stop. But these were the Romans. They didn't have any limit as to how many times. They didn't also have a limit that it had to be a leather strap. They would sometimes add ragged bones on the end of them or iron balls, and often 2 soldiers, one on the left and one on the right, would take turns alternating the flogging. In 1 Peter 2:24, the phrase, with his stripes we are healed, in Greek is actually singular. With his stripe we are healed. Now, that may not mean, but it could be that he didn't have any skin left on his back. That was how bad he was opened up. Isaiah 52:14 says that his appearance was marred more than anyone, his form more than the sons of men. The second more could be more than even human looking. He didn't look like a human, at least on his back anymore. He was so disfigured. Disfigured by the Roman soldiers, as we will read when we read the next verse. And it talks about the praetorium in the Roman cohort. So disfigured, he didn't even look human anymore. So they made him kill Jesus. He would have let him go, said Peter. But Pilate had learned that Herod was in town also for the Passover holiday. Pilate lived in Caesarea, not Jerusalem. He was in town for the Passover. So is true with Herod Antipas. This is son of the Christmas Herod. He lived way up north by the Sea of Galilee. He normally was in Tiberias, but he also was in town for the Passover. And Pilate, learning that Jesus was Galilean and Herod was around here, around in town also, sent him over there and tried to get out of it. Now, Matthew doesn't talk about that, but I would like to go to Luke 23, which does talk about the trial with Herod. Main reason to go back to the trial with Herod is, where'd this reddish robe come from? The reddish robe did not come from the Roman soldiers. The reddish robe came from Herod. And it will say so in Luke 23. I will read verses 6 through 9. And when Pilate heard it, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was in Jerusalem at that time. Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him, and was hoping to see some signs performed by him. And he questioned him, Herod questioned Jesus, at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there, vehemently accusing him. And Herod, with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe, there's where the robe comes from, sent him back to Pilate. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day, for they had been enemies with each other. Pilate had lots of fights with the Jews, and we did that last time. We will not review the fights with the Jews, but among them, the four sons of Herod wrote a letter to Caesar. They demand that Pilate take out a gold shield from Jerusalem. The gold shield had no image, so Pilate thought it was okay. It just had the name Caesar on it. And they wanted just the name out. Well, the four sons wrote a letter to Pilate, and to Caesar, excuse me. The four sons wrote a letter to Caesar, and Caesar sided with the Jews and said, take the shields out. So Pilate was in this position, in being crafty, when he heard that Jesus was from Galilee up north, and Herod is in town. I thought it's best to get out of this trial. Take him over to Herod and let Herod decide it. And the council and the elders go over to Herod, and they basically say the same thing they said to Pilate. Herod wanted to see Jesus do miracles. Let's see magic tricks. And Jesus wouldn't even talk with him. Gave him the same accusations, and essentially Herod agreed. Time to get him killed, but we'll send him back to Pilate, and that's where this red robe comes from. We'll talk a little bit more about the colors when we get back to the Pilate story in Matthew 27. Matthew doesn't say anything about Herod. He doesn't say anything about getting the red robe over there. Herod sends him back to Pilate. So we will go back to Matthew 27. Which Matthew has left out all of the Herod and left out the red robe coming from Herod. So please come back to Matthew 27 and we will read the second verse of our section. Matthew 27:27. The soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole Roman cohort around him. There was a fort on the northwest side of the temple. It was called Fortress Antonia. You got Anthony and Cleopatra. So Fortress Antonia by the temple, and it was up high, and they could look down into the temple. Later they will run down to protect Paul, who's being charged with bringing a Gentile into the temple. Soldiers were close by, and there was a place of the Roman soldiers on the corner of the temple. So many think that that's where this took place, this beating and these trials. But I think Pilate and Mrs. Pilate would not stay in a soldier's barracks for the holiday. There was another place. It was built by the Christmas King Herod as a palace in Jerusalem. At the time of Jesus, this palace in Jerusalem was vacant. So most of the time, no one was there. It seems like Governor and Mrs. Pilate would stay in old Herod's palace. Matthew 27 does not say it's a palace, but Matthew 15:16 does use the word palace. So I would put it in Herod's old palace, which is actually closer to Calvary, closer to Golgotha. The high priests and elders had woken Pilate up and wanted him to go out. I would imagine it was in Herod's old palace on a cold day. In terms of how many people were there, it says a cohort of Roman soldiers. We're more familiar with legion. A legion is 6,000. A cohort is 1/10. If it had a full number of soldiers, it would be 600. Sometimes it was not fully stocked, but maybe 200 to 300 soldiers. 200 to 300? Well, what are they going to do with 200 or 300? When we think of Jesus carrying the cross to Calvary, maybe 200 or 300 soldiers along what we might call the parade route, Latin Via Dolorosa, which we'll talk a little bit more in a minute. Before they put him on the cross, they mistreat him, and that's verses 28 through 31. And they stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him, which probably came from Herod. After twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand, and they knelt down before him and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." They spit on him and took the reed and began to beat him on the head. And after they had mocked him, they took off the scarlet robe and put on his own garments back on him and led him away to crucify him. Accusation was that he was the Son of God. He was also the King of the Jews. And since the accusation he was the King of the Jews, and he told Pilate he was the King of Truth, this is how the soldiers are treating him, like a king. They're in the old palace. So when they did their mockery, that has a kingly aspect to it. They put the crown of thorns on his head. They had him hold, it's always translated reed, I would just say a stick. Hold this stick, there's your scepter, you're the king. This is the kind of king that the Jews deserve, so hail, King of the Jews. Because the Roman soldiers didn't like the Jews. And this is a very suitable king for them. Isaiah 50 verse 6 says he gave his back to those who would strike him, smite, I think is the older translation, the cheek to those who would pull out his hair, his face to spitting. Now later in the day, when it got dark all of a sudden, there was an earthquake and the veil and temple ripped in two. Later in the day, a Roman soldier will say, "Truly this was the Son of God." That will be later. That's in verse 54. But before there was any darkness or earthquake or veil in the temple ripped, nothing supernatural, this is how they were treating him. They were treating him as a buffoon, a delusional nutcase, a crazy. This is the type of king that they really deserve. He was a pretender, or modern language, he was a con man to them. The robe came from Herod. Doesn't say so here in Matthew, but the robe came from Herod. We have in Matthew the word scarlet, and in Mark the word purple. They aren't the same Greek word either. I won't give them, but we have like scarlet, we have like purple. Well, they're close. Reddish color, deep red, going over into purple. And sometimes people, even eyewitnesses, might call something a little bit different. Meryl and I have done this with a suitcase. Go get the green suitcase. There are no green suitcases. They're all gray. So So looking a little bit, one person chooses this, another person chooses that. So what you have here is a different words, but it's deep, dark red going over into purple. We might think of grapes that you might get at the grocery store. It actually fits that the two eyewitnesses were both accurate, just a slightly different definition of what color, what they were seeing on this robe. Now we get to verse 32. As they were coming out, they found a man of Cyrene named Simon, whom they pressed into service to bear his cross. Typically, only four soldiers and an officer march with a person to the execution site. But it seems like there were a lot more than this on the Via Dolorosa, on the parade route. Seemed like there was a lot more. I would interpret as they were coming out, maybe as a reference to the whole Roman cohort up above. It's not necessary, but a whole Roman cohort had just watched him be beaten and ridiculed. They knew that Jesus had a lot of supporters because of Palm Sunday, and maybe the supporters will show up. So they were coming out, could be the whole cohort, 200 or 300 of them, at the parade route, not at the cross, but at the parade route. Matthew's account does not say much about what went on the way of suffering. Dr. Luke, he always likes to put in ladies and children. So Dr. Luke talked about a large crowd, also the women. Women mourning and lamenting. Jesus turning to them, "Daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and your children, for the days are coming." If I'll just paraphrase, the days are coming. It will be a blessing not to have children if you're going to stay in this city of Jerusalem. People will run to the mountains, they will run to the hills. And Jesus was referring to AD 70 when the city and the temple were to be destroyed by the Romans. The city did not accept Jesus at his first coming. And so while carrying the cross, he warns them that there will be punishment. When we think of Jesus carrying the cross, we usually think of the full cross. Maybe possible, the full T. But most of the time, the poles were already upright at the execution site. And those condemned would be carrying just, we call it the beam or the top of the T. Still, that would be heavy enough. A lot of us probably have picked up a railroad tie. And I've picked up a railroad tie out in the middle of nowhere when I saw one. How heavy is this? Especially when I was a kid. How heavy is this? Heavy enough. And Jesus was tired, and his back was raw and bleeding. It's like he collapsed carrying his cross. The Romans could force people to stop what they were doing and do work for the Roman army. The Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5:41, if someone compels you to go a mile, go with him two. So the Romans could stop somebody from doing their daily work. They caught Simon of Cyrene. And I sort of might have been on a religious holiday at Passover. Cyrene is in Libya, in North Africa. And Simon of Cyrene was in town for the Passover. In a lot of movies, they picture him as a black man. Well, he's from Africa, so it could be, although the Ethiopian eunuch in Acts is more clearly a black man. Libya. He was in Jerusalem for the Passover. Matthew, Mark, and Luke give his name. Mark gives Peter's memory and gives the name of his family. Simon of Cyrene, and then two sons, Alexander and Rufus. That's Mark 15:21. Often people named in the Gospels became Christians, and that's why they get their name, particularly common people who are not famous. Bartimaeus, Jesus healed his eyes, and so he probably became a Christian and testified in church. Malchus, Peter chopped off his ear at the time of the arrest. Jesus put his ear back on, and he gets named in the Gospels, so probably Bartimaeus and Malchus. Jairus, the synagogue ruler. Well, his daughter was raised from the dead. So often if people are named in the Bible, they became Christians. Probably true of Simon of Cyrene. And probably true of the sons named in the book of Mark, Alexander and Rufus. Although I mainly am slowing down here because they found a plaque, an ossuary, a bone box, 1941 in Libya. The Germans were in Libya. They were running North Africa in 1941, and they found a bone box that said Alexander of Cyrene, son of Simon. It is often believed that they have this person who carried the cross, that they have his sons. We call them ossuary. And while we're listing ossuaries, probably Simon of Cyrene's son, more definitely Caiaphas, and more recently, James, son of Joseph, brother of Jesus. We got three very important ones, but the first one that was found is Simon of Cyrene, and probably do have his ossuary. He carries the cross. Did he go out to a cave called Golgotha, or cranium, or the skull? Or did he carry it to a place which is now the Holy Sepulchre Church in Jerusalem? Read one more verse, and then we'll come back to that. Verse 33. And when they came to a place called Golgotha, which means a place of the skull, 1882 and 83, a British general saw a cave around Jerusalem, and he thinks it looks like a skull. I couldn't get the printer to make a real good one this morning. It's like, I think there were three holes in it. Anyway, this is 1883. And the Bible doesn't actually say it has to look like a skull, because the place of the skulls where all these people were killed. The Bible doesn't actually say it has to look like a skull. And it's like 1882. General Gordon, called Gordon's Cavalry, a British general, looks at it. For centuries, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre has been the place where they thought the cross was. It doesn't look like a skull in that church, but it doesn't really actually say that. It could just mean lots of people were executed here. And the Church of the Holy Sepulchre goes back to, this was the place of the cross in AD 140, they thought that. So it's not quite back to the time of Jesus, but it's a long way back. So if I had to think where he carried the cross, I think it is the place where the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is now. And that is probably the better place for the place of the cross. We use in our scripture reading today the King James Version of Luke 23:33, because the King James has the Latin word for skull, Calvary. So that's where all our music came from, and it means skull in Latin. It's not actually in the Greek, but in Latin they kept using Calvary so often in Western Europe that the King James translated that over into our language, and it does mean the place of skulls. Now we'll look at verses 34 through 36, where they're, you know, getting ready to put Jesus up on the cross, and they're giving him some painkiller. Verse 34 through 36. Wine to drink mixed with gall, and after tasting it, he was unwilling to drink. And when they had crucified him, they divided up his garments among themselves, casting lots. And sitting down, they began to keep watch over him there. There will actually be two offers of drink. Verse 34 was one of them, like a painkiller. Later, Jesus will say, "I thirst," and they will put water on a little sponge and offer it to him. So this first one is the painkiller. There will be another one. To me, the most interesting part of the account is what is not here. These are very clear fulfillments of messianic prophecies. But it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that in the book of Matthew or in the other books. It doesn't make a connection back to Old Testament prophecies. Psalm 69 said that they would give him gall and vinegar and painkiller. There's no Psalm 69 reference here. Psalm 22:16, they pierced my hands and feet. Psalm 22:18, they divided my garments and then cast lots for a singular garment. No messianic connection. To me, this makes it actually stronger, because it means that the gospel authors were just writing the events. They were not looking for fulfilled messianic prophecies. These obviously are, but the gospel authors were not looking for them, didn't notice it, which means they weren't reading the Old Testament and writing an account that fits the Old Testament. They were just writing what happened. And only later we look at it and say, this fulfills this, this fulfills that, this fulfills that. But the gospel writers were just writing the events, not fixing them to fit the Old Testament. No references to it. That, to me, that's an even stronger fulfillment of messianic prophecy. Regarding the nails in hands and feet, critics used to say they didn't do that. They tied them up. And 1968 is, you know, a while back, but modern times, when they found the remains of a crucified person, Johanan, we'd say John, had his name on it, and it had the bottom of the leg and the foot, and the nail was stuck in it. Before then, they often criticized the Bible. They must have tied them with ropes. They didn't use nails. Then they found one, that the gospel accounts were not making up things. It was an accurate way. Now we want to do one more verse before the end of today's study. And above his head, they put up the charge against him, which read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Pilate had to give in. You aren't going to be a friend of Caesar. And also, perhaps one of Pilate's friends had just been executed, named Sejanus. It's back to Paul Meyer and his books on history of Jesus. Pilate had to give in, but he kind of had enough. He thought that Jesus should not have been crucified. What evil has he done? Acts 3:13, Pilate would have let him go. So he just about had it with him. He puts up a sign, "This is Jesus, King of the Jews." They wanted him to change it to, "He said he is the King of the Jews." And Pilate's like, "What I have written, I have written, and it's going to stay there." Paul in Colossians 2 does a theological charge over Jesus' head. A theological or spiritual charge on the cross would be broken law. And in Colossians chapter 2, it says, we broke the law, and it was kind of like nailed above him to the cross, and then taken away. The penalty for the broken law that we all have broken was paid for. Another thing I'd like to say about the history of it is he did die outside the gate. The book of Hebrews said he died outside the gate. But this shows the Bible is accurate, because at Jesus' time it was outside the gate. In AD 44, they built the gate around it. So it was only true, you know, just a few more years. It was only true maybe about 14 more years after Jesus died. He died outside the gate. Then we know they built another gate around it. And the Bible is very, very accurate, even though there was just a small time in which it would be true. Applied to dying outside the gate, Jesus was an outsider. So if we feel like outsiders today and we don't fit in with culture and society, it says in Hebrews to go out to him who is outside the gate. And it says to bear his reproach. They thought Jesus was an outsider. We can be outsiders. If they make fun of Jesus and they make fun of us, still stand beside him as an outsider. If they don't accept us, they didn't accept him. We'll do more on Jesus' death on the cross next time. And the musicians, please come.